Here we go.
Jake and Josh are here to analyze the game they love for the team they love.
This is another Dolphins podcast.
Here's your host, Jake Mendel and Josh Houts.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of another Dolphins podcast. Thank you all so much for joining us and happy weekend. It's a Cat and Houts show. That means we are talking NFL draft. We are diving into the cornerback draft class. And this is a very, very unique situation, guys, because this was some Chris Greer's brainchild for a few years. You spend big on Byron Jones. You have Xavier Howard around. You bring in Jalen Ramsey. But all of a sudden, Cat, is this secondary maybe a cause of concern for the Miami Dolphins?
It's not a cause of concern when you look at the starters. I mean, you know, Jalen Ramsey, Kendall Fuller on the outside. They signed Jordan Poirier for a year, who's playing at a high level still. Javon Holland, you know, and Kader Kohu is, you know, had kind of an up and down year, but still a really good second year player going into his third year now. But when you take a look long term, I mean, Jalen Ramsey is going to be 30 in October. Kendall Fuller is going to be 30 a month after the season ends. Kohu had the up and down season. Then after that, you know, Nick Needham was re-signed on a cheaper contract, but played 72 snaps last year. Cam Smith, complete washout of a rookie year, played only 22 snaps on defense. And then Saran Neal is more of a special teams player, played only 50 snaps. So combined between Needham, Neal, and Cam Smith, you know, you're fourth through sixth cornerbacks played not even 150 snaps last year.
Yeah, I mean, unless they're hiding, you know, Cam Smith's this diamond in a rough that, you know, just could knock it down the field, which it could be, right? I mean, we could see Cam Smith be this absolute beast in year two, actually getting some playing time, but I don't know how you can't look at this unit and feel, you know, long term at least, that there's no way that this thing's settled. I mean, I think we can all agree, and I'll stand on it, I'll get egg on my face if I'm wrong, but I think we talked about before, Kendall Fuller may be an upgrade over the Xavier Howard we've seen in years. Jalen Ramsey, though, is getting up there in age, and it's something that I think a lot of Dolphin players overlook, right? Everyone talks about, you know, Xavier Howard, some of these other guys being older corners, we don't need them. But Jalen Ramsey, I mean, when you traded for him, he was up there in age. So there's going to come a time when you definitely need to do something that secondary. I think this draft, as we'll talk about, has some pieces that the Dolphins could definitely target at 21 or in the second round. But when you look at this unit as a whole, I mean, I think we're pretty good on the outside with those starters. Like you said, I think I'm hoping Kader Kohu's bad year, as Jake will talk about some of the numbers, came because, you know, they were playing primarily zone. You know, maybe it was just wasn't the right fit for him. I don't know. But I'm hoping Kader Kohu bounces back and is that perfect piece in the slot. But there's still work to be done there. So I'm talking in circles here. I feel good about it, but at the same time, I can definitely see why you'd need to target someone early in the draft or, you know, maybe even have someone on speed dial if a free agent's out there that really catches your eye.
You know, Josh, one thing, too, about the cornerback position is it's not just about the starters, but if you can provide a boundary outside cornerback through the NFL draft, whether that's, you know, some of the guys we're talking about or whether Cam Smith emerges in his second year, now you can get more creative with Jalen Ramsey. And it's hard with, you know, if Anthony Weaver was in Baltimore last year, he saw how beneficial it was to have 5-6 defensive backs playing and moving all around the field. You know, can Jalen Ramsey in certain situations be that Ravens version of Kyle Hamilton last year? So that all factors into this defensive back evaluation.
It's been a fun exercise to go through position by position, because not only are we looking at possible fits in the draft, but we're taking a deeper look at what this Miami Dolphins roster is. We were kind of under the assumption that the Dolphins have reached a point where they can start to maybe focus, not specifically, but maybe best player available, kind of. That's the kind of spot they were looking like they were getting into. But man, going through this depth chart, and as we're looking at cornerback, I'm feeling a little queasy about the depth of this secondary. You consider, like, this is a entire defense that's going through a metamorphosis this offseason with Anthony Weaver coming in. You lose Christian Wilkins. All the shine you have up front is going to be gone, and it's maybe even worse when you consider that Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb are going to take a little while to come back. You have two free safeties signed in Javon Holland and Jordan Poirier. You have two strong safeties signed in Syrian Neal. You mentioned he's more of a special teams guy. And Elijah Campbell. Nick Needham's another guy that's kind of been cross-training in the secondary. But, man, I think, like, we can say that they're set at starters, but I mean, Kendall Fuller, 29 years old, he's been around for a long time. I don't want to hate on the move whatsoever because I think he's a good player, but I've seen this story before with this Miami Dolphins secondary. You have two good defensive backs established in the league. Byron Jones, I don't think, really dealt with injuries, and I know injury luck is something that no one can ever expect, but looking at this unit, looking at how little Nick Needham played last year, the struggles Kader Kohou had, guys, I think this might be up there. And Kat, I want to ask you, where would you put, like, let's just say a member of the secondary in terms of needs for the Miami Dolphins, where would you place it overall?
Yeah, and that's the debate, because for me, the needs with the Dolphins are number one and number two are interior offensive line and interior defensive line. You can interchange them as you please. And then from that point, I actually have cornerback as the third need. You can also make an argument for offensive tackle, wide receiver three, whatever the case may be. But given the lack of depth and given the age of the cornerback position and how important it is to a defense, especially a defense like this, that's why it is need number three for me.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. I mean, we're sitting here talking ourselves through it, and I completely agree that's up there. It has to be. I guess the thing that I'm looking at now, and I'm kind of feeling a little bit, you know, that pain a little bit more inside, is this is why the Dolphins could have used a Brandon Jones. You know, obviously they cannot even compete with that price, but, you know, bringing him back, or a Deshaun Elliott, again, could probably not compete with that. Bringing those guys back, having that third safety, I'd feel a lot better, at least about the safety position. And then we continue to talk about corner. I mean, I'm hoping that Kader Kohou, and I was going to ask you guys, do you think, you know, does Kader Kohou or Nick Needham bring you enough versatility where maybe you feel okay putting them on the outside? I mean, I know that they've all had their struggles, and I think they're both probably better at nickel, but do you feel like maybe Anthony Weaver, if, you know, this was the depth chart coming into the season, could still use Jalen Ramsey as a chess piece and maybe kick Nick Needham outside where he's not as good, or even a Kader Kohou? Because if Cam Smith isn't ready to go, I mean, that might be your only move unless you go out there and draft a guy early.
I don't want it to sound like a cop-out, but I kind of hope they just wait and see what team they're facing, right? I think that was kind of the biggest issue with Vic Fangio. They never really adjusted to what the opponent was doing. It was our defense, we know what the weaknesses are, but we can kind of overcome those based on talent. And it was clear that the Dolphins really couldn't. You mentioned, Kat, that Anthony Weaver, it's an entirely new system. So this might sound a little dumb, and please just call me out if it does, but defensive tackle is a very big weakness for this Dolphins team. Does that necessarily mean it's a need? Like, is there a scenario where looking at how this defense could succeed, how it could thrive, is there maybe a path where you just say, okay, defensive tackle, we have Zach Sealer, and the rest is just going to kind of be a little bit of a struggle, but that's okay if we have the members in the secondary to really let this Weaver defense get a little bit stronger?
You know, the question is, do you use a first or second round pick on defensive tackle, or do you go to the free agent market, basically swoop up what's left and try to get by for another year? I mean, this, it kind of reminds me back in 2005 and 2006, way back when Nick Saban came into town and the Dolphins had to replenish the defensive line, and they signed the likes of Keith Traylor and Dan Wilkinson. And then a couple years later, when they had another need at nose tackle, they signed Jason Ferguson. Those guys were able to plug in, take up some space, and provide a need for a year, and then move on. That is the direction I hope the Dolphins go with a Calais Campbell or somebody else out in the free agent market. I'd be disappointed at this point if the Dolphins at pick number 21 stood where they were and took an interior defensive line, even though I like a lot of players in the class. But I think 21 is too soon for an interior defensive lineman.
Yeah, and I think I was ignorant at the time, but I think I probably felt a little bit, I can't remember that far back, but I think even when Christian Wilkins was drafted, I was sitting there thinking, you know, maybe there were other ways they could have went with that. So I'm here for that. I agree with you. I want to know if you guys have any thoughts on Benito Jones. I'm looking at their depth chart right now, and you said about how they might just come out and throw guys next to Zach Sealer and try to get by. I mean, that's exactly how it seems like they're doing. I mean, again, I joked and threw out a tweet about bags of Idaho potatoes at Five Guys being what they're trying to put right next to them. It seems like they're kind of doing the same thing at guard. So give me your thoughts. Do you think there's any way that they do use some of those guys that they signed? I mean, Gallimore was on there. I know Jake likes Brandon Peely. I probably always mess that up every time I say it. But Benito Jones is still a player that you know, he's solid. I think I liked him when he was here the first time. I was a little sad when he got rid of him. So any of those guys manageable, I guess, at least to kick the can down the road like the Dolphins seem to love to do at the position.
I'm so ready to hang up and listen with this group. I look back at what the Dolphins did with Christian Wilkins, and the decision to draft Christian Wilkins was a great one for this Miami Dolphins defense. That said, the impact in year one wasn't really apparent. And I think if the Dolphins were to kind of go that path this year in that first round, you don't know if that impact is going to be so apparent. So I'm kind of on board if you're kind of just trying to stay above water with the Benito Jones, somebody who started a lot more games last year, hoping you can just catch lightning in a bottle. It's been pretty, interesting to follow. The Dolphins have signed 5-6 different defensive tackles this year, where it does kind of make it sound like we're going to have 4 or 5 different guys paying 30 to 60% of the snaps and just hope it works out. Isaiah Mack, Davion Nixon, Jonathan Harris all coming in as well.
Yeah, and first of all, I think as far as the defensive line is concerned, two of the three positions are not being filled right now. And I expect those to be either draft picks or free agents. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Benito Jones, look, hey, he's a good rotational piece. He's a good backup nose tackle, but if he is your undisputed week one nose tackle, then yeah, that's rough heading into the season. But the difference between Vic Fangio and how he uses the defensive line and how Anthony Weaver, and we anticipate him using the defensive line, is that the Ravens rotated defensive linemen like crazy. I mean, you look at Justin Matabuke, for example. I mean, a Pro Bowl defensive tackle this past year with 12 sacks. But if you take a look at his snap count, I mean, you're talking about somebody who played, you know, fewer than 900 snaps. So he wasn't out there every play like a Christian Wilkins was. So I expect a lot of rotation. And because of that, I expect the Dolphins to go, you know, 6-7 deep on the defensive line on game day, not just relying on the top three guys like they did under Fangio.
With that, let's start to turn our attention on the draft. Before we start to get into this cornerback class, Josh, I want to ask you, right in for the Finsider, we see a lot of mock drafts. Have things started to get a little crazy for you? You know, are we getting into that dead zone where everyone's just praying, like, please let this mock draft blow up because I said something crazy? Are you starting to see that kind of build to the surface?
At times, but you're going to hate me for this, or maybe you won't. I don't know if you're the same way. I stopped even reading mock drafts at this point in my life. I don't know why. I don't even give into them. I mean, there are times when I might. I think last time I really cared was when Tua was drafted. I remember, you know, hyping all those up, especially if Justin Herbert was the pick, just to piss Dolphins Twitter off. But, you know, I kind of avoid them. I like to look at them to kind of see how the board's falling. But people just throw as many darts as they can, right? Even on Twitter, you see everyone doing a mock draft every other day just so they hope one of those picks turns out right so they can come on here and pretend they're the next NFL GM. So I haven't seen as much as you would think, but that's also because I'm not looking. What about you, Kat? Are you a mock draft guy? You really eyeing balling the different mock drafts out there?
No, I hate mock drafts, actually. It's look, I know where each team is picking, and I know the players that are going to be available. So because of that, look, I like doing mock drafts as it gets closer to the draft. Love to do a Dolphins mock draft with you guys. Love to do an NFL mock draft, all that stuff. But I if I tweet something about, you know, I like this defensive tackle, I get 6 mock drafts in my responses. And, you know, interesting, I guess, some of them. But no, overall, no, I like to do one Dolphins mock draft, one NFL mock draft, and that's it.
Have your opinions started to change in the last month or so, Kat? Because I think that's the little bit of trouble I think people fall into. There is so much downtime where, you know, you might overlook or rethink how your process is going on.
As far as cornerbacks concerned, or just the draft in general?
I was thinking draft in general, but if you have some perfect scenarios of 4 cornerbacks, I think that'd be a good segue too. So dealer's choice.
Yeah, look at the cornerbacks projected to go in that, you know, in the first or early second round. It hasn't changed all that much. The biggest thing is Quinyon Mitchell has continued to just knock out the pre-draft process. And I'll take it a step further. I think Quinyon Mitchell is the best defensive player in this draft, not only player in the secondary. You know, cornerback out of Toledo has 37 pass breakups over the last 2 years. You could say, okay, he plays at Toledo, but then he goes to the Senior Bowl. He dominates. He at the combine, he runs a 4.33. He's got, you know, he's got the size. He's got the power profile, everything. If he is there for the Dolphins at 21, and I don't expect him to be, it is a quick decision for me at pick number 21, regardless of what offensive lineman or defensive lineman's on the board. So I expect him to go somewhere in that 10 to 20 range. If I were to put out a mock draft today, I would have him going eighth to the Falcons. I think he'll end up going that high because those players are that hard to find. After that, the consensus number two cornerback is Terrion Arnold from Alabama. And he's somebody that I have a clear tier below Quinyon Mitchell. I see him more in that late first round area, but you know, you're talking about somebody too who's extremely scheme versatile, twitchy, 6 foot tall, 190 pounds, had 5 interceptions and 12 pass breakups this past year. He can play on the outside, he can play on the inside, and he is a feisty cornerback. So I expect both of those cornerbacks, Quinyon Mitchell and Terrion Arnold, to be gone when the Dolphins pick at 21. But if they're not, that's going to be interesting to see if the Dolphins go best player available there.
Yeah, I mean, I've admitted every time we come on here and we do these, Ed, I don't get to watch as much film as I'd like. But I think since we first came on here and started talking draft prospects, you got me hyped about Quinyon Mitchell. So if he falls to Miami, he'd be that guy that I think automatically skyrockets up my, you know, players that I want. I know every year I try to tweet out like a top five players list. He has to be up there. I'm looking at Pro Football Focus, you know, trying to see what they think of these guys. And right now they have Cooper DeJean, the cornerback from Iowa. You know, I think he can play a little bit on the outside. Versatile as heck, I guess. What are your thoughts on him? Because they have him ranked as their number one corner on their board. So again, Pro Football Focus, always say take with a grain of salt, but want to throw his name out there and see your thoughts on him, because if those other two guys are gone, maybe that's a guy that the Dolphins have a legit chance of getting at 21, or, you know, maybe day two.
Yeah, it's a very a timely question, because Cooper DeJean is going to have a pro day on Monday, because he had a broken leg. He suffered a broken leg in November and has just been medically cleared to play. So I view him as a safety, not a cornerback. And the reason for that is that I've watched 5 or 6 games of him. I just can't see the ability to turn and run at an elite level. I mean, also, you know, PFF's big on him, but one thing they also have too is that this is somebody that has only seen 199 snaps in press coverage. So he is playing as a safety or so deep off the ball, a cornerback, that you kind of have to judge him based on that film. I think he could very well be in play for the Dolphins at 21, because not only is he a fantastic player, very instinctive, 6'1", 203, and is the best hitting cornerback in this draft, even above Quinyon Mitchell. But he can also move inside and play in the slot. He can play at safety. And if you're looking for that three safety look with Javon Holland and Jordan Poyer, Cooper DeJean easily gets on the field as long as he's healthy and can come back, which he's expected to be.
That sounds like music to my ears. I think there is a level of flexibility and versatility that the Dolphins still desperately need here in that secondary. How do you digest film when you have Terrion Arnold on one side and then Kool-Aid McKinstry on the other? Like, I always get super worried talking cornerbacks, because I think that the big picture is so important. Not entirely the same, but I always look back to what Nnamdi Asamoah was with the Oakland Raiders and then what he was with the Philadelphia Eagles. It's one thing when you're on a 4-12 team and you're the top cornerback and opponents will see that, hey, they have one guy who's pretty good, let's pick on everyone else. How do you kind of balance on scheme versus specific talent when you have two guys who are neck and neck, it seems like, on some big boards?
Yeah, that's the difference with the cornerback spot compared to other positions, is that, look, if you're a great quarterback prospect, you're a great quarterback prospect. Same thing with wide receiver, running back, and, you know, off-ball linebacker, things like that. Cornerback's different, because if you take a look at the Brian Flores-led Dolphins defense, you needed a real do-it-all cornerback, a guy that can get up and press at the line of scrimmage, where, you know, a Vic Fangio defense, you're looking for somebody who has a little bit more zone awareness. So given what you said there, I'm glad you brought up Kool-Aid McKinstry because he's an interesting guy because, you know, he and Terrion Arnold both, you know, are going to be drafted probably in the first round here out of Alabama. Kool-Aid McKinstry was a projected consensus top 10 pick before the year. And now you see him late first, early second round. And the interesting thing with that is Kool-Aid McKinstry last year in 2022, or 2 years ago in 2022, allowed 34 catches for 310 yards. In 2023, he allowed 19 catches. So you take that and now you factor in that he's dropping on boards. So he's an interesting evaluation. And then you think of Kool-Aid McKinstry, you just look at the name Kool-Aid and think that this is like this flamboyant type of guy. He's not. He's a consistent, serious performer at the cornerback spot. But the other side of that with Kool-Aid as well is he seems to be strictly a boundary cornerback. He's not somebody that can move around as well as a Terrion Arnold or even a Quinyon Mitchell. So if you're looking for somebody to be that boundary cornerback, if you're the Dolphins and allow Jalen Ramsey to move around the defense, I think he would be a really good choice at 21, depending on who's on the board. So we'll see with him, but he's a fascinating evaluation over the last 2 years.
I think we could all drink the Kool-Aid on Kool-Aid, right? That would be one of the coolest things. I was gonna ask you, so how many corners do you see going in the first round? How many do you have? Because I think based on my count, you might be at 4 or 5 corners in the first round. I guess Cooper could be considered a safety, but defensive backs, how many you see going in the first round?
You know, Mitchell and Terrion Arnold definitely go in the first round. I think Kool-Aid does as well. Cooper DeJean, it really depends on his pro day. And, you know, he, like you said, he could be a cornerback or a safety. Nate Wiggins is fascinating because he's projected to go in that mid to late first round too, but he's somebody that's really scheme dependent too, where he's 6'2" and ran a 4.28. And that alone should land him in the first round. And he's been a very, very good player at Clemson over the last few years. And he could turn and run for being 6'2" because he has that size. Think of the cornerback version of Devontae Smith, but also he's going to be a boundary cornerback and he's not going to be able to tackle. When I watch him, I get, if you remember Tony Lippett for the Dolphins, you watch him and I get those exact vibes. So Tony Lippett had, you know, there were years he had 4 or 5 interceptions, but he gave up a lot of passes underneath. And that's kind of Nate Wiggins's game. But also Nate Wiggins doesn't allow, you know, with that length and with that deep speed, he doesn't allow a lot of passes over his head either. So yeah, that's overall to answer your question. I see 5 cornerbacks going in the first round. If you include DeJean.
When you consider the fit for the Miami Dolphins, I mean, it's one thing when you're like, all right, we need that lockdown number one cornerback. Well, the Dolphins, you have Jalen Ramsey. So you instantly have a solidified level of flexibility. Javon Holland, you know, we kind of like to dunk on Vic Fangio for how dull that defense felt at times. But Javon Holland played more in the slot. He was all over the place more than we've ever seen. So you have two, let's say, queens on the chessboard that can take up any spot. Kader Kohou kind of found himself in a tough situation last year. Luckily, he won't have to deal with Stephon Diggs. But kind of going back to that Nnamdi Osmo point I made, Kohou was forced into action last year. He started 16 games while playing 986 snaps. He kind of struggled at times. He allowed 791 yards, 7 touchdowns. Opposing quarterbacks completed 84% of passes. When teams play the Dolphins, they know that Javon Holland's good. They know that Jalen Ramsey's good. What do you need out of this other cornerback to just show that, hey, they'll be able to just put up a fight? We understand that they're going to get beat sometimes. We saw what happened with Cam Smith. He got on the field the first time in the preseason last year, and he got beat so bad on a double move, they didn't let him play the rest of the year. So what do they absolutely need from this cornerback to be able to be in their day one, you be comfortable with him, and happy that you took him in that first round?
Number one thing is don't get hurt. I mean,
good point.
Look, over the last 2 years, you know, Byron Jones, we expected to be a week one starter. He missed the year and then was, or excuse me, 2 years ago, missed the season and, you know, retired from football and hates everything to do with football. Now, according to everything he said, which, you know, I can understand that. Xavien Howard is somebody that, although an all-time Dolphins great, has been either injured or playing hurt for the better part of 2 years. Jalen Ramsey missed the first part of last year. So Kader Kohou, because of that, had a lot on his plate. And then you factor in that he's a young player and had to switch from a complete man scheme to a zone scheme in 1 year. So that's, you can call those excuses if you want with Kohou, but given his up and down play last year, I can understand that. But he's one guy that I'd stand on the table for on this Dolphins roster, of a player that I think is physically everything going to be a good player. But Cam Smith, I mean, look, I liked the pick at the time, and there isn't a lot that has changed other than the fact he didn't play last year. I mean, Vic Fangio, when asked about him, just said, look, he's not ready to play. I'm paraphrasing, but you know, but he was also somebody who was just 21 years old when he came out, was physically talented. I wish they had gotten him on the field in some role last year, but you know, he's somebody that I think, for argument's sake, you have to look at as a bonus here in his second year. You can't say that this is a guy that's going to go out on Sunday right now, sitting here in April, and he's going to go out and defend, you know, the first or second receiver for the Buffalo Bills.
We wish you would, though, right? I mean, that's kind of what you'd expect. Where you, I mean, I guess we're sitting here saying that. I mean, that'd be so nice. For Nick Needham, I mean, I think I said it before we came on here. The zone scheme, I think, really caught him. We're going to say or make excuses. We can say the sophomore slump. I want to know if, you know, just, and I think it will, you know, just utilizing Jalen Ramsey right. I mean, that's one of the biggest things his defense did not do properly. I mean, there were times when, you know, you knew that Jalen Ramsey should have been on the number one wide receiver, and for whatever reason, Vic Fangio just stubbornly did not want to do it. So I think that'll help not being matched up in some of those mismatches at times, and just third season, better defense that probably is better accustomed to. And I don't know if you guys saw him. There's hype videos going around Twitter, but his legs and, you know, his hips are moving, and damn, dude, he's fast. So I'll stand on the table as well for Darth Kader, and I know Jake will too.
Just for the nickname alone. And yeah, no, I definitely wasn't trying to hate. It's just the operation the Dolphins are working with. Kat, do you think that, I don't have any inside information, and I don't know what's true and what's not. Do you think there'd have to be some sort of pride swallowing from someone like Chris Greer in order to take a cornerback that high? Because, I mean, knowing what Dolphins Twitter is, it's going to take maybe 15 seconds worth of brain power for them to be like, Cam Smith's a bust. Pack him up.
Yeah, I think there would be. And that's probably why the Dolphins aren't going to take a cornerback in the first two rounds of the draft. I would personally like it a lot, because even if Cam Smith does shine and you draft a cornerback in the first or second round, you're going to have to replace Jalen Ramsey and Kendall Fuller in 1 to 2 years anyway. I mean, yep. Fuller and Ramsey, I mean, are not going to be here starting a quarterback at 34, 35 years old. I mean, mm-hmm. It's just not going to happen. So I like stockpiling the defensive back position. That's one position because when you can fit 5, 6, 7 players on the field on a given play, that makes a lot of sense. And one player too, that I like actually more than Nate Wiggins, and I think should be a late first rounder, is a TJ Tampa, a cornerback from Iowa State. And this is somebody who's 6'2", almost 6'2", almost 200 pounds, you know, ran a 4.52, which isn't a huge deal because this is a big cornerback, but he's extremely physical, comes downhill. And I like him more on the outside boundary more than I do Nate Wiggins, given his size. And I also think, given his physicality, that if you want to move him to safety as a backup option, then I think that would be something that could happen too. So TJ Tampa is probably going to go somewhere in the second round. He would be the only player, I think, that's realistically projected to go in the second round that I would agree with the Dolphins taking in the second round, even though the optics of that wouldn't look good with taking a cornerbacks in back-to-back years who have some work to do in the second round.
It has to happen, though. I mean, you're saying about stockpiling. I mean, I have no issues with us stockpiling at this point. I mean, I don't know if it's because I get older in age, I start to see this. I mean, you're talking about these guys getting up there, Fuller, Ramsey. I mean, that just sounds like a window slowly closing if we don't figure out a way to plug this thing with cornerback. I had to make a joke at some point. I think Landon Greer's eligible for the draft. I don't know if it's next year or something, but Chris Greer's son's eligible for the draft coming up. So I have to make a joke that there's some South Carolina ties there, and he's going to bring him in to be I don't even know how good he is, but somewhere there's a joke there.
Kat, what's the most likely way the Dolphins do draft a cornerback? If you had to shake the crystal ball, because I agree with you. I'd love them to go offensive line both of the first two rounds and just go all in. Let's score 60 points a game. The defense, if you give up 45, that's all right. We all love fantasy football, that type of thing. But where would the draft have to go for the Dolphins to like push all their chips in on a cornerback? Would it involve maybe trading up? Would it involve trading down? Is it just someone drops the 21?
Yeah, I would say somebody would have to drop to 21. Like you're sitting there at 21 and Terrion Arnold or Quinion Mitchell are there and you're like, I can't believe he's here and we have no choice. Other than that, I'd be surprised if the Dolphins took a quarterback in the first two rounds, even though I would like it a lot more than other people. But when you look at the later rounds now, because you've got that massive gap between pick 55 and their fifth round pick, you've got 100 plus picks. There's some depth in the class too. And one player that I really like too, and it's not just because I'm a Mizzou fan, but Chris Abrams-Drain from Missouri is small. He's feisty. And if you're looking for somebody to just insert into the lineup as a potentially, you know, third, fourth cornerback, I think he can bring a lot of value to your team. I'm not sure if he quite falls to the fifth round, but he's some guy that could be a consideration. Both Florida State cornerbacks, Renardo Green and Jerrion Jones from Florida State, I think are also players that could get lost in the shuffle and fall down into that day three area. You know, Renardo Green is... He really impressed me when he went up against both LSU wide receivers, so Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers. I mean, he went up against both of them and stood toe for toe. He's got some holes in his game, but, you know, 6 foot, 195 pounds, can play on the boundary, can play on the slot. I think he's a really good player. Elijah Jones from Boston College has been there for 6 years. So Adam Gase was coach of the Dolphins when he was there. So that's the reference I always have to bring it back to. But someone who ran a 4.44 at 6'2", 185 pounds, if you're looking for somebody who's polished, who brings length to the position and might, you know, if he catches on quickly, give you that versatility to kick Jalen Ramsey inside to the slot in certain situations, you might end up getting a steal there too.
Go ahead, Jake.
I was going to say, just to kind of play our favorite game here, Kat, Jimmy Wilson was a fifth rounder. Tankersley was a fourth rounder, I believe. Lippitt was a fifth rounder. What type of cornerback do you think you would like the Dolphins if you had to go into the history books? What type of cornerback would you like them to see them get in like that fifth or sixth round range?
Yeah, Jimmy Wilson was...
I hated him. Oh, so much.
Yeah, so Jerry Wilson from like 20 years ago is my least favorite cornerback of all time. See, Jimmy Wilson could at least blitz and he got a couple of interceptions and I like his backstory was incredible where he did 2 years in jail for a crime he didn't commit.
Oh, so, I did not know that. That's interesting.
Yeah. He shot his, what was the story? I probably shouldn't go down this road, but I know that he was, his conviction was overturned. I forget. I'm not going to go down that road. But anyway, a type of cornerback that I'd like is probably that Tony Lippitt type because the best player on the Dolphins defense, if you take Bradley Chubb and Jalen Ramsey or Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips's injuries into consideration is Jalen Ramsey right now. And when you consider that, and then you know that he was frustrated with his role last year, frustrated with his injury. Now you can put a long cornerback on the outside. And if you get lucky with that long young cornerback, now you can move Ramsey around. That's the type of player that I think the Dolphins should look at in the later rounds. And Elijah Jones is somebody that really does come to mind.
Yeah, we need that Lippitt type. I was going to jokingly say Sean Smith. I think he's a little bigger than Lippitt, but we all remember him having that insane one-handed interception that one time.
Preseason, too.
Yeah, preseason. We always get hyped up. I mean, we're sitting here talking about Tony Lippett. I'm pretty sure there's tweets of me and I think Sutton and I were like real hyped about Tony Lippett. So, you know, it's just one big endless circle that never ends. But I think you were talking about some of these guys. You're mentioning all these different guys that could go round one. I do think the Dolphins at the point at the stage they're at should just let this thing, like you mentioned, Kat, wait till someone falls into their lap, whether it's that offensive line, like, you know, Jake's pounding the table for, hopefully, you know, we get our corner. Maybe it's that defensive lineman, you know, maybe they see the next Christian Wilkins out there. I mean, I don't know. I think there's a lot of options there, and I think we do got to tip our hat to Chris Greer for, you know, having so many options available, but we also have to, you know, shed the light that he missed on Cam Smith and that he missed on Channing Tindall. I mean, you were sitting here saying how the only reason you don't like Cam Smith anymore is because he didn't play. And I was going to sit there and joke, that's the only reason I don't like Channing Tindall anymore. But I think his goose is probably cooked, if we're being honest.
Kat, when we went through free agency before we wrap up here, I want to get your thoughts. We were kind of trying to figure out what the Dolphins are going to do on the offensive line, specifically left tackle, right? You have Tron Armstead and he's going to be awesome for 12 games, and you still need to figure out those other five games and be comfortable about it. We thought that Kendall Lamb might be able to get a bigger contract elsewhere, maybe start a few more games, but what are your thoughts on what it seems to be like a perfect fit, the one last ride for Kendall Lamb being in Miami?
Yeah, and Kendall Lamb is someone we talked about here several weeks ago as somebody that would be perfect to re-sign. I mean, you know, he didn't do anything special last year, but you never heard his name. That's a good thing with offensive linemen a lot of the time. So, you know, to bring him back for, you know, one final year on a cheap deal, that's exactly what we wanted. And, you know, Keon Smith in this limited action last year showed a lot of progression. So, you know, the Dolphins should keep an eye out for offensive tackle still in the first round and the second round. And it's a very, very deep offensive line class. What'll be fascinating to see when it comes to offensive line is, you know, do you have the ability at either 21 or 55 to take an offensive tackle who can play guard in their first year mm-hmm. and immediately start and then long-term kick out to replace Teron Armstead?
Laramie Tunsil with Brandon Elbert, kind of, sort of.
Exactly.
And going through the list here, I want you guys to jump on me when I'm wrong here, but like going through Miami's offensive line depth in general, even you go down to Robert Jones, Jack Driscoll, Lester Cotton, there's playoff experience in your second and third string guys, which isn't something we're really used to seeing with the Dolphins. I still think the funniest thing that ever, it's not funny, people lost their jobs, but remember when Adam Gase just cut three offensive linemen and all of a sudden the unit got better? Like, they were so desperate to try to find anything that would improve the unit slightly. I'm really getting encouraged when you see these second and third string guys for the Dolphins. They're not like undrafted offensive lineman at a UMass that we were trying to hype up a few years ago. Instead, it's like, hey, these guys have been around for a little bit. They have flexibility at a few positions. And hey, by the way, they started in the most intense stage on the playoffs. So the way they're kind of reshaping this offensive line, despite I think they still need more help, I'm kind of liking it.
Yeah, I don't blame you on that. And the question is, have the Dolphins gotten to the point on the offensive line where you can take the best available player at 21. And I think they, at least in their minds, they probably have. I mean, I think offensive line is still the number one need. If Jackson Powers Johnson is there at 21, he's probably going to be one of my top players, whether it's center or guard, because of just the production he's had over the last 3 years at Oregon at both spots that the Dolphins need in pass protection. So, but that you're kind of 10 deep on the offensive line. But it doesn't mean it's a good 10 deep.
I mean, right, exactly.
You're talking about Lester Cotton, Driscoll, Robert Jones, Liam Eichenberg. Are these quality starters? I don't think they are, but the question is, can the Dolphins get by with this type of offense where Tua is getting the ball out of his hands quickly? Can you get by with that? And I think that's kind of what the Dolphins are looking at here. So if I were to guess, I think the Dolphins may not draft an offensive lineman in the first two rounds.
You're killing me, Kat. You're killing me. I want to get your thoughts.
I hope they do. But the way that the roster is stacking up, and when you see the clear-cut need on the defensive line, where you've got Benito Jones and Neville Gallimore mm-hmm. on one-year minimum salary contracts, it's like they're kind of writing their own story on that. So – I don't know. That's the fascinating conversations that are going to happen here over the next couple of weeks.
Does it change your opinion at all? If I let you know, we dropped the pod today, so I won't get on you too much if you haven't listened to it. We had Brian Baldinger, we had Baldy on the show, and he had a line that it just made my eyes pop because I've been kind of saying this, and I don't want to like sound like a hater. He said he doesn't believe that Miami's day one starter at center is currently on the roster.
I love Baldy. I would disagree with him on that, very simply because Aaron Brewer moved to center last year for the Titans, had by far his best year, and the Dolphins paid him $7 million a year. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying it's impossible because Brewer has played left guard, right guard, and I think he's played even tackle in a few situations. So if what the Dolphins were looking for was a interior starter, and I don't care where he plays, center, left guard, right guard, then Aaron Brewer could move around. But I tend to believe that center is a very important position in this type of offense, and the Dolphins signed him specifically to be a center. So we'll see.
We do got to mention, Baldy was absolutely in love with Jackson Powers-Johnson. That might have just been his way of saying, you know, they need to draft this guy, let him be the center, move Aaron Brewer over to guard. But it was definitely interesting hearing that. And I think it just goes to show you that it's different now, right? I mean, I'm wondering if Butch Berry is okay with the pieces he has. I mean, he almost has to be. And you asked if they could go out there and do it again with Tua getting rid of that ball so quickly. I mean, we saw it last year, so it's hard to say that they can't. But, I mean, ideally, that's not what you want. So that did pay me also to hear you say they might not go offensive line at all. But let's be honest, based on Chris Kreider's history, I don't know that we really want him. He hit on Austin Jackson, I guess, and Robert Hunt. But you know what I'm saying.
It's certainly looking better now. And I'll tell you this, I hope Baldy's right on that, because if you take Jackson Powers-Johnson at 21 and move Brewer to one of the guard spots, that's what I want. I get a feeling that they're not going to do that. But when you take a look at Powers-Johnson, the productivity he's had, I mean, over the last year, I mean, almost 1,250 pass protection snaps, and the guy has let up no sacks and three pressures.
Beautiful.
And like, he's 6'3", 320 pounds. And typically with offensive linemen, we saw this with Austin Jackson, saw it with Liam Eichenberg. When it comes to offensive linemen, the issue they tend to have when they come in the league is play strength. Jackson Powers-Johnson will not have that issue. So that's why I would love him at pick number 21. But there's a difference between what I want and what, reading the tea leaves, I think the Dolphins are going to do.
I'm trying to do I don't watch nearly as much film as others, but I do like to really dig into numbers and test things out. So I've been looking at Miami's offensive line. I'm working on a couple projects, and this is totally Pepe Silvia from me, but I look at Robert Hunt, what you had at right guard, 6'6". I do wonder if Liam Eichenberg, I think he's listed 6'4", 6'5". He's a candidate to swing to right guard, because Miami had at center, you know, you're going from 6'6"-ish Connor Williams, 6'5"-ish Liam Eichenberg, down to 6'1" Aaron Brewer. Well, Miami's left guard last year, Isaiah Wynn, was 6'2". So he has kind of that body frame. So that's my Pepe Silvia of why I think that maybe they'll kind of switch guys around. But again, it's all, nobody knows what's happening, and that's kind of how Chris Greer wants it. And I guess he's doing a pretty good job at it.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the major question, because along the offensive line, I mean, you take the first like 50 players in this draft, you're going to have 13 or 14 of them that are offensive linemen. So given that it's the Dolphins, if not least talented position, one of their top two, then do you really pass on offensive linemen in the first two rounds? I wouldn't, but I get the feeling that they might.
Joshua, you got any final thoughts here before we wrap up?
No, I was just going to say, I mean, at this point, it looks like we're just going to be trusting in Butch Berry, and it goes back to the cornerbacks. You know, even that defensive line unit, they brought in Anthony Weaver for a reason, right? He has his eye on that unit. So we'll trust the process and see how it plays out on all of that. But I just love how we're sitting here talking about, you know, corners, and we're just jumping all around, because truly, we don't know what Chris Greer is going to do. We all have our inklings, you know, we all have our preferred prospect and what we want, but it's uncertain what happens, and that's the great mystery of the NFL draft and why we love it so much.
Gentlemen, you have said it all. Thank you all so much for listening to another episode of Another Dolphins Podcast. We will be back early next week with a new show. But until then, have a wonderful weekend and thanks.